This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, I'm Sharad Kutan, and today we're talking about art. We are asking not how to make art, but why art, and what does it mean when it is present in our society? And, you know, what does it tell us about ourselves, and why we should look beyond the simple pleasures of art? Joining me to discuss this is Beverly Young. She's the co-director of Rogue Art and the co-editor of the book in question, which is titled Reactions, New Critical Strategies, Narratives in Malaysian Art, Volume 2. Now, that is a mouthful, Beverly. It's just, you know, trips off the tongue, quick, you know. Why? You've been on the show before and talking about Volume 1. Now, why Volume 2?
Hi, Sharad. First of all, thanks very much for having me on. And yes, to continue talking about our Narratives in Malaysian Art project. Narratives in Malaysian Art, Volume 1, Imagining Identities, came out last July. So Volume 2, as you say, it's quite a long title, Reactions, New Critical Strategies, is really a companion to the first volume, Imagining Identities. The first two volumes of the project look at the art history and the art practice. And whereas Volume 1 looked at a broader history, going back to colonial times, and looked at Malaysian art through the Malaysian subject and how basically artists have expressed ideas of identity, of the nation, and also competed for these kind of narratives from colonial period to contemporary time.
You know, for somebody who's not, say, an art historian who hasn't studied, I mean, these are kind of slightly bewildering notions, right? Why would you even want to study art? Many people would assume art is about pleasure or pretty things. You know, they're displayed on walls or they sit comfortably on a shelf and you appreciate them. Why is there a need to invest so much thinking into it and, you know, talk about them in terms of history? Doesn't it just kind of put a damper on art? Is it, does it make it all sort of too serious, and shouldn't we just lighten up and appreciate art?
I think art, just like music or literature, can be read and appreciated at many levels. Of course, there is the element of art being something that is collected for the home, something that decorates your life, but that's a very limited way of looking at it. Nothing wrong with it, but it's one limited way of looking at it. I think for many artists, I think most artists who dedicate their lives to making art, you know, giving up alternative careers or, you know, sacrificing really comfort and the safety of other paths to go and do what they do, they want to say something. They have a feeling of perhaps a role to voice out and reflect what's going on in our lives and their experiences. And so there is a very serious side to art. If we only saw art as being decorative, I think that would be rather insulting to most of what artists do today.
So art is then a kind of a mirror of society. It's a mirror held up against society. It's or artists see themselves as the conscience of society, or they're engaged in some sort of critical dialogue with their own society.
Yes, indeed. I think many artists do. I'm not saying that there is, you know, only socially critical art or only decorative art or certainly aesthetics, the whole idea of artistic strategies and approaches. These might embrace both socially critical art or even art as a means of self-expression, response to personal issues or in response to art. Artists respond to what art has been made before as well. And in many ways, it's such a very, very, very large field. I'd say just like music or literature, you can't sort of put it in one pigeonhole.
Right, so you have Dostoevsky on one end, and then you have Mills and Boons on the other.
Yeah, and in between also very beautiful writing, which might not be about the problems of society. So I think that what our project means to do really is to try to relate the stories that artists tell through their works to both an art audience and to a general public of Malaysians and people beyond Malaysia who are interested in what artists here might be doing. So it's really to tell, to some extent, the first volume tries to tell the story of Malaysia through artists' eyes over the decades, and competing approaches and interests to do with, for example, looking back to Malay culture and traditions and also looking at Islamic principles and philosophy as inspiration for art, or alternatively looking at the idea of the nation, the Mohiba nation, the different cultures and how they come together, and art expresses that. So imagining identities has all those elements going through it of how artists have pictured and expressed this picture of Malaysia in many very different ways. Whereas the second volume really begins in 1969, although it does touch back a little bit further than that. It looks at how our contemporary has been shaped. It looks at how maybe the first generation of Malaysian artists, as having become a nation, began to look critically at why art was being made and how art was being made. And at the same time, responding to this really quite confusing time, I think, of great modernization, as well as the rupture of May 1969 and going forward. So Volume 2 really looks at artists looking at themselves and artists looking at society, and from the 70s to today. So it looks at really the shaping of our contemporary times and art in relation to that. So the two volumes complement each other, and they tell slightly different stories from different angles about Malaysian art. Obviously, these are not the only two ways to talk about Malaysian art, but we thought that these were engaging themes and allowed us to cover quite a lot of territory.
Now, we could just sort of step back a little. I mean, are you an artist yourself?
Oh, no.
But you have training in art history. Is that where you're coming from in terms of your interest in these matters?
Yes, certainly art history.
And I think for many people, they'll be wondering what art history is, in fact, as an endeavor. Why study the history of art?
Well, I think for me personally, as a student, I started taking art history at my A levels, so when I was about 16. And for me, it was a wonderful way to read history, to learn about history as a starting point, to read about political history, social history, and the experience of the past through artists' eyes is a really wonderful, approach. So that was one way. I think my first interest in art history, but also it's important to look at how we look at cultural production and study cultural production. Well, why do we produce culture? How is it produced? What are the kinds of agendas behind cultural production? So art history, in a sense, I suppose, is also a study of how culture is produced, as well as a look at how this reflects the realities or experiences of the past.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you get when you do study art history, one of the things that perhaps strikes a lot of people immediately is, say, the development of perspective in, say, Western art. You know, that always that transition from, you know, a particular representation of reality, and there's this struggle for artists to create perspective in their work. And, you know, I mean, because it's so intuitive, right? This idea that we look at life and there is perspective, as it were, but, you know, artists for the longest time drew the world as if it was flat, you know, and you know, for me, that was always the interesting moment, you know, always like, how do we get there, you know?
That sort of brings up very, very deep and interesting questions about why people make art and what they were trying to achieve. Also on perspectives in different art histories, because obviously Western art history is not the only, is the main area that's been studied for in terms of at least modern art. But yeah, art history as the study of the development or progress of art practice, yes, there is a sense of, I think, things changing, people growing new ideas, new ways of approaching things, from the achievement of perspective to that's grown into something much, much broader and diverse now. Now the questions about the kinds of strategies you can use in art making have proliferated. It's a very different world from when you were studying how to draw perspective, even though it's a very fascinating thing.
Yeah, no, and there's also, you know, all these issues of, say, technology and art and, you know, different representational technologies in the development of art. But we'll come back to this issue and more about the book in question and how Malaysian artists in particular have struggled to develop strategies to capture reality. Then that's coming up with me and Beverly Yong. She is the co-editor of a book entitled Reactions, New Critical Strategies, Narratives in Malaysian Art, Volume 2. All on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is The Bigger Picture and I'm Sharad Kutin. With me is Beverly Young and we're discussing her book, a book that she put together along with Nohanim, and it's called Reactions, New Critical Strategies, Narratives in Malaysian Art, Volume 2. We were talking just briefly just now about, you know, the question of why study the history of art, and, you know, we brought up these issues of, you know, I brought the issue of perspective, and, you know, I saw on your face, it's kind of like, okay, that's a slightly naive but, you know, interested view of art history, because it is a moment, and as you rightly put it, it's a moment in Western art and not necessarily global art practices, which, you know, of which there are many strategies. But what does it mean when we start to look at artists and how they think about the world, the tools that they have, whether it's in an actual material like oils or, you know, they use color and it's fixed with egg yolk or whatever it is, to issues of using new technologies, you know, the Instagram or your hand phone or whatever, to create art. So the question really is, when you're looking at this, are you looking at the whole range of strategies available to artists? And what does it tell you about the world in which they live?
Big question, Sharad. Well, I think, first of all, the volume limits itself to, as I say, the past, I suppose, 40 over years. So you're really looking at work that develops within painting, but actually perhaps looking at, as I say, new critical strategies. The first moment in the book really looks at the 70s and how roughly perhaps two groups of artists try to break away from the existing status quo of what artists seem to be doing at the time, which was abstract painting or naturalistic painting. Some really interesting things happening already, of course, in painting itself. But these two groups, roughly sort of clustered around Latif Mohiuddin and the Ana Alam Children of Nature group, and Reza Piyadasa, Sulaiman Issa, and the sort of new scene group who were promoting a more kind of hard-edged, new conceptual thinking about art making. A sort of philosophical, intellectual-wise kind of way. The Ana Alam group would look into things like collaboration, working with poets, writers, doing sort of agitprop theatre, street performance. It was a kind of art, a more bohemian kind of way of looking at artists' freedom. I think something quite... I like that we're very pleased that we began the book with the manifesto of Ana Alam.
I'm actually very pleased too, because I read it with such delight. I mean, it's from 1974 and yes. It could be something that would speak to us right now.
That's right, yeah. So just to quote a little bit.
I think, in fact, the opening stanza is very nice. Yeah.
So all around us are machines assuming control, humans making judgments purely in blacks and whites. And truth is but a sign to accepted beliefs from times before, and art a hobby attached to status. And I think the whole of Volume 2 really kind of tries to address that and sees how artists really, fight to bring meaning into what they do and into our lives and our society. I think this is perhaps the main thrust of the second volume.
Now, you know, the word hobby appears, and not to diminish people for whom art is a hobby. It's about, you know, relaxing. It has a therapeutic quality to it and all that. People who are, you know, who kind of take up kind of weekend painting and stuff. And I think in art history, there are groups that really did wonderful things,
yes,
just being hobbyists.
Yes.
But here is a sense that art has to be a tool for some larger purpose, a political and social purpose, right? And the last two stanzas, you know, read in a very interesting way. I'm just going to read out what it says. That all art practitioners from all branches of arts who feel this tremor and turmoil and with us in this manifesto are our comrades in the same vessel with no divisions of ancestry, of skin color, of beliefs, of age, of gender, and length of hair in this generation of nature's children. And, you know, and the length of hair thing, it is the 70s, right?
Yes,
when people did have long hair, and it was a problem in our society. So the idea that artists themselves and their own bodies were statements, what they did was a statement, what they tried to convey in their art were statements, are very interesting, because in many ways, art doesn't always stay that way, and artists get co-opted by the state. You know, they come to speak for the nation and politicians, you know, and such. So there's actually such an interesting, as you said, I mean, art is a kind of lens on our society, isn't it? And in this book, and in putting these two volumes together thus far, I know you have two more in the works.
Yes.
And what have you learnt about the Malaysian artist and his and her view of our country?
I think there's been so much. Really, it's been incredible learning curve. Even though I've really worked in, I suppose, Malaysian art for the past 20 years or so, and met many artists and talked about their journeys and their problems and issues, I think to put this range of work and practices together, again, it's not intended as a comprehensive, definitive series of books by any means, but really just a way of looking at Malaysian art and trying to bring together as many perspectives and voices and readings as possible. I think what it does, what it told me, is that it's amazing how all these practices, these arguments, these issues, when seen together, bring together a really, really rich picture of what culture can do and what cultural discourse can do. I think that we need to hear each other more. I think for sure, from the experience of Volume 1, that it would seem that we should be talking more to each other about our issues. There are certainly, especially the fact that volumes are published in Bahasa Malaysia and English, I realise there are many viewpoints I would never have read before, or facts and interesting details, and even artists I would not known before without reading these texts. And I think likewise, vice versa. We are blind to each other in many ways. So I think this opened my eyes a lot to that. Also that we're very, very ignorant. We have so much work to do, so much more research to do, and there's a lot that's worthy of further study. And I think that there are now a handful of doctoral students pursuing studies in Malaysian art, and I really hope that this project is part of this kind of wave of making an effort to document and study what artists have done.
Now, in the preface, which is written by T.K. Sabapathy, and he's a well-known art critic and art historian,
yes,
based in Singapore, and he says that one of the central issues for this volume is the question of the new. And that's got, of course, resonance with, you know, the whole approach to understanding modern art, isn't it? And there is that, is it Robert Hughes' book, The Shock of the New and such. How do you explain that notion of the new and what's in it? Because to a layperson,
First of all, I think the meaning of the new is different in different contexts. And I think even talking about so-called modern art or contemporary art in Malaysia, it means something very different, perhaps, from what we think of as modern art, sort of in the European or American sense, or internationally. So I think another way of looking at it is quite a number of, I think most of the artists that are written about and the writers who write in this second volume, they're young. So the Anak Alam Manifesto is written by a group of young people. Likewise, even Reza Piadasa and Sulaiman Esa, writing their manifesto on the mystical reality, are also young people then. So it's this, and there's this great sort of desire to bring forth something fresh and new and different and change. So I think when this volume talking about the new, it's talking about this desire to do something new, to bring something fresh to the table. I think that's the simplest way of looking at it. Really.
And that would contrast perhaps with a different attitude, maybe one that views tradition and continuity and the need to go back to the old masters and emulate them. All the things which are also very valuable as attitudes in art practice, but are different or distinct from this modern impulse to always push the boundaries and, you know, break with the old and such.
Well, we're in an interesting kind of context. I mean, if you're looking back into the 50s to 70s, you know, we didn't have a fine art, so-called fine art or painting tradition that we could look back to. We had other traditions. We had traditional arts. And certainly some communities would have, say the Chinese community, for example, would obviously have a Chinese tradition to look back to. But essentially everything in Malaysian art is new. When we first, when the country, you know, first came to be, if you like. But I think that the idea of the new, the alternative, the fresh, isn't necessarily in confrontation with the idea of tradition. Certainly, I think a lot of contemporary artists in Malaysia look to tradition to find new inspiration, to look at different ways of making art, and that is, you know, that has been a strength. So I think we start off with a tabula rasa, if you like. But by the 1970s, I think there was a feeling among the young artists that they wanted to go forth and do something different from even the generation before them, who perhaps in their eyes were a little too reliant on sort of naturalistic painting practices, too reliant on European traditions. In their eyes, you know, I think that, of course, a lot of work that came out in before the 70s was very fresh, very interesting, and very, really important in Malaysia. But for these artists, I think they were feeling that they had to push forth. And this goes on, I think we feel another cycle in the 1990s, where, again, I think a generation of artists came out feeling that they had something they wanted to say that was different from what was already being said.
That's interesting. I think for a lot of Malaysians who perhaps now have a sense of that generational shift when it comes to politics, for instance,
yes.
You know, we had the reformasi generation that's pushed. Now that generation is actually moving into the past, as it were, and it's that Kalana Jaya generation, you know, those young people incensed by what happened in the last general elections, like, oh, you know, and that marks for their moment in history and their generation. Now, what your book in interesting ways does is like a historical take on these generations, these new waves, as it were, rather than, and I know there is another book out in town, which is a kind of a mapping of really all the new practices that seem to be going on right now, which is less historical. It's really about opening this book and saying, oh, that's an artist I want to follow, or, you know, that's another artist whose work might interest me. It's a flat kind of, mapping of what is going on now. This is much more historical, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, it tries to be. It's always nigh impossible to historicize the contemporary. I mean, we're still living the story. And as you say, you know, I suppose the reformasi generation, if you like, even keeping up with what's going on today and what younger artists are doing, they're already a generation after me. but I think it's necessary and important to document and try to at least sort of start putting some ideas on the table.
But there seem to be two groups that would benefit immediately from a book like this. One, of course, is artists. You know, artists whose practice must, in some sense, be built on an understanding of where they are located, historically speaking. But the other group, of course, is that group of Malaysians who want to understand art, who go to art exhibitions and go to galleries, who perhaps don't understand fully the need to have that art historical framework in order to deepen their appreciation of what they see. So they might like something, but doesn't it add another dimension when you can actually locate that work within some other larger story about the making of art in Malaysia?
Yes, of course. I think that's the thing with understanding anything or appreciating anything. You can enrich that experience. You can make it deeper. I don't think you have to. I think certainly there are many very visual artworks that are produced with that in mind. And I think that we bring our own readings as well to every work of art. So we invest it with our emotions, our sensibilities, our concerns. But I think for people who are interested in stories, who are interested in how the art relates to now and where we are, of course, yes, hopefully this kind of project will help to enrichen that, yeah.
Before we end, I'd just like to say, you know, a little bit about the book, which is it's laid out with a series of rather short essays. They're not terribly long, most of them. It's got fragments of, you know, poems. It's got images. They're not full color plates of anything of the sort. But it really does help you understand, maybe give you a sense of the kind of work that's been produced. They are littered throughout the book in interesting ways. And, I'm wrong. They are, in fact, full color plates right at the end of it. That's the great thing about about radio, you know. You can see my folly right in front of you. But anyway, so they are color plates right at the end of it. But and it is, in fact, a delightful book. You don't have to read it in one shot. It's not like studying art. It's really about sampling ideas, isn't it?
That's the idea. We didn't want... I mean, obviously, some of the writing can be academic. Some of it is very casual and conversational. What we did was interspersed artists' interviews with artists, and also some excerpts from catalog texts with a small number of particular artworks that told the story of reacted to specific events in Malaysian history or phenomena. So where you see there are black and white images and short text, this is a sort of running narrative through the book, talking to artists about why they made work about, for example, Mao meeting Tun Razak, or about reformasi, or about these kinds of events. So it tries to get the artist's voice to speak as well about why they might make socially critical work. And how does that balance, for example, with exactly the question you asked, how does it sort of balance with aesthetics? So that is very much part of the book as well.
Well, like all good art books, it is itself a piece of art. It's very tastefully laid out, and I love the paper.
Yes, we have to thank our designers.
It's a serious issue, you know, that, you know, art books should in some ways display the same creativity in bookmaking as the art that they're talking about, and, you know, and expand our horizons. Thank you so much, Beverly.
Well, thank you, Sharad.
That was Beverly Yong discussing the book Reactions, New Critical Strategies, Narratives in Malaysian Art, Volume 2. I'm Sharad Kutin for The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.